Blog Talk Radio.
Delving past the headlines, sorting through the media bias, exposing the propaganda, and challenging you to use your brain. It's time to tap into the truth.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed time to tap into the truth. Welcome to today's broadcast. I hope you're having a great day wherever you are and whatever it is you may be doing. This is, of course, your ever-so-humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee, here on the ever-popular Super Bowl Sunday. Don't worry, I won't feel too bad if a lot of the regular listeners are off making their last-minute preparations for Super Bowl parties here and there. Those of you who simply are too busy to listen in now and catch this on the podcast, trust me, I understand. I have my own Super Bowl plans for later. As a football fan, and I am, it concerns me sometimes the politics that makes its way in and around professional sports, period. You know, we've all heard the controversy that's been swirling for a few years now, but fan to me life recently over the Washington Redskins name and that they should change it. And we know how people like to politicize everything from the helmets to the safety. Of course, every time there is a major football event, there are also those people that come out of the woodwork that want to discuss how terrible the sport is. Joe Namath today, they were making a big deal earlier today. The interview actually took place a little while back, of course, but he came out talking about how terrible it's been to his health. But guess what, folks? I mean, this is football. You know, the whole point is, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be safe and shouldn't be careful and they shouldn't work to continuously try to improve the safety. But it is a collision sport, and if you're going to participate in this collision sport, you have to be willing to accept the possible consequences. It's not any different than becoming a boxer, than becoming an MMA fighter. I think a lot of folks still remember Spider Silva's little fight just a little while ago where he had a nasty break. People are speculating it's the end of his career. Now, as we look at things like that, of course, the safety patrol and the nanny police think that they know better than everyone else, that people shouldn't be allowed to take risks. But the bottom line here is these same nanny police aren't really that interested in our safety. It's about how they can gain control. When you look at them, they say, yes, this is for the children. This over here, this is for the elderly. This over here, this is for your safety. But isn't it funny how everything that eventually becomes restrictive in your life is always initially for the greater good? I highly recommend anyone who hasn't already go back and listen to the speeches given by a certain well-known dictator by the name of Adolf Hitler, a tremendous orator who's capable of giving speeches. And if you don't know German, then by all means get a translator. But listen to the passion. Listen to the well-meaning, this is for your own good message that each and every statement was. It almost draws a lot of comparisons to, I don't know, a certain occupier of the White House. And I know this isn't the first time this particular similarity has been pointed out. He's a great speaker. Only I have to give Hitler a lot more credit in so much as Hitler didn't have the benefit of teleprompters. I thought it was very interesting watching the State of the Union address this year, which, you know, this past Tuesday was the State of the Union address. I know most of you who listen to this show have probably heard the analysis to the point of everything being ad nauseum, so I don't plan on spending a lot of time talking about it today. But I thought it was very interesting that I guess Barack Obama's vision is starting to fail him a little bit, or maybe they couldn't get the fonts on the teleprompters big enough for him this go around. Because in years past, those teleprompters were back far enough that you could get a clean view. The camera angle, they could go dead on, and they could get a nice picture of the occupier, the vice president, and the Speaker of the House both in the background, without having the teleprompters clearly in the picture, but not this year. In fact, I don't recall, other than the extended standing ovation that was given to our military hero who they had up in the stands, who was nearly killed in a roadside bombing. He was there so that you could have that brief acknowledgement that our military still sacrifices for us today, and an attempt by our beloved leader to at least pretend like he gives half a rat's backside what the military does or doesn't do for us. But it was only during that brief point in time that I saw him look away from the teleprompters long enough to keep from going back to the other teleprompter. He never made direct eye contact with anyone. And that's because it was very important. He knew the tone had to be right. He knew the message had to be right. He couldn't miss a single comma. Every pause had to be timed specifically, because how else can you get the United States Congress, the Senate, and the House, regardless of the party, to stand up and applaud when he tells you you're no longer relevant? When he says the American people can't wait and I won't wait. When Congress refuses to act, then I will. Again, I know we heard ad nauseum for the rest of the week during the analysis, the statements about I have a pen and I have a phone. Well, congratulations, Mr. Occupier. So do I. Now, granted, when I sign something, all it means is I am personally obligated to something. In your case, all it means is that you now have something else to try and blame on somebody else. You talk a big game about taking responsibility, although I can't think of a single instance, even going back to the time that you were in Congress yourself, where you have ever taken responsibility for something you've done. Now, ever so often, the science geek in me and the science fiction nerd in me pops out on the show. And I hope that you find that enduring and entertaining instead of just, geez, what a geek. But either way, it happens. And in this particular case, when he said that he would act on his own and the Democrats in that House stood up and applauded, I just had this flashback to the Star Wars movie when Senator Amidala is standing in the chamber as the Chancellor just essentially made himself the Emperor. And that really great quote right there. So this is how freedom dies, to the sound of thunderous applause. Now, her quote, of course, is actually this is how democracy dies. But in our case, it's freedom, because we don't have a true democracy. We are a representative republic based on democratic principles. A lot of folks on the left seem to have a hard time making a determination and a distinction between those two. And for that purpose, it serves their own purpose. And that is to make you think that you have the power to overthrow all those mean and nasty Tea Party conservatives that want to take stuff away from you, that they, the good guys, just want to give to you. All you really have seen is another great example of why we, the people, who do have the power, by the way, why we need to stop electing politicians and start electing average citizens who want nothing more than to serve their term and then get back to their lives. I know. You've heard me say it before, and probably to the point that you're tired of hearing it. But in truth, there is no more important message that can be delivered to you this year. Stop electing politicians. That's why the Tea Party appeals to so many people, and that's why both the Democrats and the party Republicans, the establishment Republicans, can't stand the Tea Party. Because they both have a really good deal going. It's a great thing. And they're both going down the same route. Why does Chuck Schumer stand up and say, yes, the president isn't going far enough in using the IRS to target the Tea Party? Because Chuck Schumer still imagines the day where he gets to kick back and sit behind the desk in the Oval Office and that nameplate says Chuck Schumer. Whether he ever has an intention of running for that office or not, the politics of making that run are grueling, even for hardened veterans such as himself. The imagination is still there. And for those of you average, everyday Americans, the people that would be out there voting and think it's okay for this guy to have that kind of power, because he promises he'll never use it, of course. Before you decide that it's okay for him to have it, you really need to stop and think how you would feel about the other guy having it. If you like this guy, but it would scare the crap out of you for George W. to have had it, then neither one of them should have it. That's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. As an example, I'm going to go ahead and move on. And I wanted to talk to you about this article that, first appeared in the Politico magazine. It seems that Jason Edward Harrington, a former TSA agent who was stationed at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport, he started writing a little bit, and he wrote this little article for Politico where he basically came out and he said that, guess what, guys, everything that the Tea Party folks were warning you about, everything that those honest-to-goodness, genuine conservatives who are concerned about your right to privacy were warning you about, yeah, the TSA were really doing it. The article was titled, Dear America, I Saw You Naked, and Yes, We Were Laughing, Confessions of an Ex-TSA Agent. Now, Harrington initially wrote about his experience as an agent on an anonymous blog, but he walks the readers through the circumstances of one troubling incident after another. Just as the long-suffering American public waited on those security lines suspected, jokes about the passengers ran rampant among the TSA colleagues. Many of the images were gawked at. People were made fun of for being overweight. They laughed at every fold and dimple on full, awful display. Harrington wrote about the full-body nude scanners that the TSA pulled back in 2013. said that piercings of every kind were visible, that women who had mastectomies were easy to discern, that their chest showed up on the screens as dull, pixelated regions, that hernias appeared as bulging, blistering growths. And not only were these scanners invasive, but they were also ineffective. In fact, Harrington writes, the TSA knew that they were ineffective. Quote, we knew the full body scanners didn't work because they weren't even installed. Lots of times they just had you run through, and the ones that were installed, they knew didn't work very well before then. And not long after the underwear bomber incident, all the TSA officers at O'Hare were informed that training for the Rapscazen system, the full-body scanners, would begin. The machines that cost about $150,000 a pop. He also talked about recalling one instructor who told the class of TSA officers that the scanners were crap, although he actually used an expletive. And while the full-body scanners have been scrapped, Harrington offers additional details about TSA officers' day-to-day activities, which included pat-downs for rude customers, code lingo for attractive women, and seizures of items. Once in 2008, I had to confiscate a bottle of alcohol from a group of Marines coming home from Afghanistan, he said. It was a celebration champagne intended for one of the men in the group, a young, decorated soldier. He was in a wheelchair, both legs lost to an IED. And it fell to me to take this kid who would never walk again, that his homecoming champagne had to be taken away in the name of national security. Now, according to Harrington, TSA provided agents with a list of largely Middle Eastern countries whose residents deserved extra scrutiny from the TSA. He noted that the list was purely political, as Pakistan and Saudi Arabia was not included on it, despite those countries' proclivity for harboring terrorists. In private, most TSA officers that I talked to told me that they felt the agency's day-to-day operations represented an abuse of public trust and funds. Harrington included that in his article. He begins to wrap up his piece, however, by recalling that he used to hint on his anonymous blog that a terrorist who wanted to beat the system could do well simply by joining it. That assertion stemmed from personal experience, he wrote. A fellow officer once returned to O'Hare from a trip to TSA headquarters and confessed that he had run into some complications. Someone realized that his background check had never been processed in the 4 years he had been an employee. He could have been anyone for all the TSA knew. A murderer, a terrorist, a rapist. The agency had to rush to get his background investigated. Who knows how many similar cases there were and are at all the airports around the country. Now, no longer blogging anonymously and out of the agency, Harrington is currently working on a novel about his experience. But doesn't this say a lot about what's going on in our country today? You want to harass somebody because they had the nerve to say something to them. They had code words for attractive women, which meant, hey, you might want to come check this one out. Let's go watch the scanner. And they weren't even doing background checks. I don't guess that's much of a surprise, given the fact that it's been recently revealed several of California's Obamacare navigators are criminals. the fact that we knew going in that these Navigator program, the hiring criteria refused any effort to check their background. If one didn't know any better, one would think that the current administration is desperately trying to endanger Americans for the sake of destroying the country. You know, if one didn't know any better. I guess it's a good thing they're there to reassure us that they, in fact, are there for us. Is anybody else as concerned about that story as I am? I mean, you know, you get on air, and the idea is to talk, and when you don't have callers calling in or you don't have guests scheduled, then it's up to you to try and be entertaining and to be as informative as possible. Easy for me to say. Blah, 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 blah. In the process, sometimes you just get hung up on an item or two. Now, at the moment, I'm in the very fortunate position to not have the obligation to worry about taking a hard break here and there, not having the obligation to have to stop on a dime. So I can get on a rant and I can finish it unless it goes past the allotted time for the broadcast. But for crying out loud, we are talking about airport security. We're talking about the fact that there was a list that, in fact, there was profiling going on, despite over and over again us being told that profiling is wrong, it's bad, they won't do it. How many other promises have we heard that have been broken time and time again? I mean, wasn't Gitmo supposed to be getting shut down within a couple of months after the occupiers' initial inauguration? Wasn't that the deal? Wasn't that what was supposed to happen? I seem to recall. And we are now into the five-year mark of the so-called, presumed, presidency of the man that occupies the White House. And Gitmo is still open, although we seem to be letting some of the more dangerous elements loose from Gitmo. American citizens who've done nothing wrong, who have the presumption of innocence, supposedly, are harassed repeatedly going through airports in what's supposed to be security. Anybody feel any safer? Now, this is a big story. It's a big deal, and it is a big deal because this guy's time working for the NSA has been verified. He's out there. He's in the open. There are no questions. There's no doubts. This guy's not lying, or at least not lying about who he is and what he's done. And the funny thing that I've seen in the response from spokespeople for the TSA, they want to argue about how the particular scanners in question have been changed and how such policies and procedures are not acceptable. Now, I haven't really heard, and you know, maybe there has been and I just haven't heard it, but I haven't really heard any denials to any of these allegations. I haven't heard somebody from the TSA step up and say, oh yeah, that ain't right. That's not the deal. That's not real. I'm concerned. I am concerned. All right, I'm going to take a quick break right about now, and we're going to open up the phone lines. When I get back, we're going to talk a little bit about Scarlett Johansson. If you want to call in and discuss her little situation with Soda Stream, or if you want to talk anything about the Super Bowl briefly, you are welcome to call in and do that as well. I'm going to be straight up with you. I'm not a huge pro football fan anymore. I'm more into the college. I just think I like the game better because there's a lot more upsets. There's a lot more unpredictable actions. You know, the programs have so much more turnover because of the limited amount of time college players participate. So, I mean, I follow college football a lot closer than I do pro football. So I'm not heavily rooting one side or the other, okay? I'm not anti-Seahawk. But from my younger days when I was a kid, I was a huge John Elway fan. And at that point in time, I have been a Broncos fan. So I have a slight leaning towards the Broncos over the Seahawks. But as a University of Tennessee fan, I have a very large soft spot for Peyton Manning. So I'm rooting for the Broncos today. Don't hold it against me if you're a Seahawks fan. We can talk a little bit about the Super Bowl if you want to, any predictions real quick, and then we're going to go into Scarlett Johansson. We're going to hit that. And a little bit later in the broadcast, we're going to talk about Macklemore's performance at the Grammys, where he did the rap Same Love. And more to the point, we're going to talk about, and I will be playing in its entirety, the Christian rapper's Bizzle's response. And I have a feeling that could get hot. So if you guys want to call in about that when we get to that point, too, here's the number. So be ready. Give us a call at 347-426-3550. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-287-5313. And you also, if you have a Skype account, can come right here to the Blog Talk page, and you can hit the little Skype button, and that should connect you as well. So we'll open up the phone lines when I get back, and we'll discuss this and more. So just stay with us. We'll be right back.
Tap into the truth. Listen in live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog posts and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yes, that's right. Every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, we do get started right here on Blog Talk. We also broadcast throughout the week over at Spreaker.com. And you can find links to those podcasts at tapintothetruth.com. You can also find the podcast at Stitcher.com. And at TuneIn.com and at iTunes. Now at Stitcher and at iTunes, the podcasts are held separately. At TuneIn, you can actually find both podcasts merge on the same timeline. So you just look up Tap Into the Truth and you can find us there. In the meanwhile, I also want to let everyone know that any music that you hear played during the breaks or for bumper purposes are part of Magnitude, which is a service that collects music from independent artists. I pay them a fee to use their stuff, and in return, those independent artists that are part of the Magnitude service get paid the royalties that way. And I just really like the idea of helping out the independent artists. So that's the reason why. Now, with noted exception for today's broadcast, because like I said earlier, we will be playing Same Love, a response, the Bizzle response to Macklemore's rap that he performed during the Grammys. But before we get into all that, I really wanted to look at and talk about this whole debacle surrounding Scarlett Johansson. Now, like a lot of you, I'm sure if you listen to terrestrial talk radio, you have for some time heard commercials for SodaStream. I know they were sponsoring, at one point I think they sponsored Rush Limbaugh. I know they were sponsoring the Sean Hannity Show, various other folks. But even then, I had no idea that SodaStream was an Israeli company. And I don't know if any of you guys knew that as well, but it came to my attention about 6 months ago. And before that, I really just had no idea. I'd heard of the company. I knew a few folks who had actually purchased the SodaStream device, I guess, for lack of a better word. And they got the set, brought it in, they used it. They liked it a lot. In fact, this one particular family that I know, they loved it so much they had no intention of ever buying regular soft drinks again because they got to control how much flavoring and how much sugar. And then they had, of course, sugar-free varieties and a lot of the flavors too. Now, to me, when it comes to sodas, I have my preferences, and they're very specific. And I can make an exception for variances and stuff like root beer, but when it comes to cola or citrus colas, I have my preferences. I think most of us are, and it can't be replicated closely enough with the SodaStream. That being here nor there, that's just the reason why I don't have one already, because it obviously saves a lot of money, and it seems like a really good product. But again, I never had any idea that it was an Israeli company. Now, that doesn't taint my thinking on the matter. But unfortunately, for a lot of folks out there, especially the ones that are still buying into the, oh, Israel is occupying Palestine kind of crap, it does tend to taint their view of the company. Well, as most of you have probably heard by now, Scarlett Johansson is the newest spokesperson for SodaStream, and she was tapped to do a ad for the Super Bowl for SodaStream. And SodaStream has tried before to have a ad placed in during the Super Bowl slots, willing to pay for it, all that wonderful jazz. They were turned down last year, and this time they were rejected again, claiming that this particular ad was too racy, is the rationale. Now, most of you probably, if you care enough about the topic, have probably seen the ad by now, and if you haven't, there's literally a ton of places you can find it, everywhere from the Daily Caller, The Blaze, literally just tons of places. It's undoubtedly YouTube by now, regardless. I would ask each and every one of you to watch the unedited ad and then tell me, in comparison to some of the other things that get put up, advertised openly, what exactly is the problem? Now, I have heard people suggest that it's really pressure being put on from Coke and Pepsi to not air the SodaStream commercial. I don't know if that's true. I have also heard it suggested that it is directly because of an anti-Jewish sentiment. Well, Scarlett Johansson took the gig to be their spokesperson. Fair enough. She did the ad. It's really, as far as ads go, fairly tame by today's standards. I mean, she's in a robe in 1 second and talking about how it's great, blah, 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 if only there was a way to make it go viral. I mean, she throws off the robe and she's wearing a dress, not a particularly offensive or overtly sexy dress. I mean, it's a fairly standard dress. She sips it, seductively, or so they say. I mean, okay, she's slowly sipping the straw. I think you kind of have to have a dirty mind in order to make that reach right there, but because she hints that she's trying to find a way to make it go viral, to get people's attention, I think that keys more people's mind into what this is supposed to mean more than anything else. So she does that. She's dancing around in front of a band, and, oh, you hear this deep voice in the back, oh, you did it, and blah, blah, blah. At any rate, sorry, Coke and Pepsi. I'm describing it to you, and I'm describing it very badly. So, again, look it up. You can find it easily. But the point is, there is really no reason for this ad to have been banned. I mean, there's no objectionable parts to it, certainly by the standards that they've set. So, the ad's been banned. And then furthermore, the ad was released, since it wasn't going to be there. And then things kind of continued. Oxfam, an international aid group that's supposed to be offering support for the Palestinian people, they announced that they were reconsidering Scarlett Johansson's position with them as an ambassador due to her signing as a spokesperson for SodaStream. Okay, well, that's within Oxfam's purview. You know, if they aren't comfortable, if they see that as a conflict of interest, then fine. But what has really aggravated me is in Scarlett's decision to stand firm on her choices here, she resigned. She was like, okay, well, if you're rethinking it, I'm going to make it easy for you. I resign. No ill will expressed directly to them, but then she goes on to explain exactly why she feels like it's not a conflict to support the SodaStream company. In fact, through a spokesperson, said that the 29-year-old actress had a, quote, fundamental difference of opinion with Oxfam as a result of the group's opposition to all trade from Israeli settlements in the West Bank. Now, SodaStream, which makes the do-it-yourself carbonated drink kits, has a factory in a couple of Jewish communities that are in settlements in the West Bank. As a result, they have been targeted for the pro-Palestinian boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. And the part that doesn't make any sense, though, is that the company in these two different locations, they employ better than 900 Palestinians. They employ them on a pay scale that would be considered equal. They have a benefits package that would be considered equal. And in the newest twist, and I doubt seriously that Ms. Johansson is overly concerned about this, but Roger Waters, you know, former Pink Floyd frontman and their bassist, who just happens to be a very prominent anti-Israel activist. Well, he went to Facebook over the weekend to criticize Scarlett, with whom he admittedly was somewhat smitten, you know, for her choice to represent an Israeli company over the international aid group, again saying, oh, I can't believe you would choose SodaStream over Oxfam. But again, let me point out to you, Oxfam made the statement they were reconsidering her position. All she did was make it so that Oxfam didn't have to say, you know what, you're fired. All she did was say, you know what, I actually think that this company is worth representing because it serves the goal of protecting the Palestinian people. She didn't pick one over the other. One was telling her, if you're going to do this, then we can't do that. Now, I applaud Ms. Johansson's decision to stand up for the company and for not allowing liberals of any particular stripe to bully her out of doing something that she thinks is the right thing. Now, she was accused by many folks, but especially in this open Facebook statement from Roger Waters, that she's been accused of embracing corporatism. She's been accused of turning her back on the Palestinian people. She's been accused of all kinds of crime. But, you know, you have to keep in mind, Waters is somebody that openly promotes boycotting Israel altogether. Now, he has written directly to both Johansson and to Neil Young. Reason there, Neil Young has recently announced that he's going to do a concert in Israel. Neither one of them have returned the letter, though. But in his Facebook post, Waters described a meeting with Johansson, talking about having met her a year or so back at a Cream reunion concert at Madison Square Garden, described her as being fiercely anti-neocon, passionately disgusted by Blackwater. You could have been forgiven for thinking that here was a young woman of strength and integrity who believes in truth, human rights, and the law and love. I confess I was somewhat smitten. There's no fool like an old fool. Well, at least he got that part right. He goes on in his little open Facebook comment to say that a few years down the line, Scarlett's choice of SodaStream over Oxfam is such an act of intellectual, political, and civil about-face that we, all those of us who care about the downtrodden, the oppressed, the occupied, the second class, will find it hard to rationalize. He later posted a series of rhetorical questions in an effort to convince Ms. Johansson of what he believes to be institutional mistreatment of Palestinians. In fact, he said that in a, quote, democratic Israel, there are 50 laws that discriminate against non-Jewish citizens. Of course, he wasn't going to attempt to list those laws, but they are all on the statute book for all to research. He wasn't going to attempt to list all of the other grave human rights abuses of Israel and their domestic and foreign policy. He would run out of space if he was going to do that. But to return to my friend Scarlett Johansson. Scarlett, I have read your reposting excuses. In them you claim that the Palestinian workers in the factory have equal pay, benefits, and equal rights. Really? Equal rights? Do they? Scarlett, you are undeniably cute. But if you think SodaStream is building bridges towards peace, you are also undeniably not paying attention. Now, Scarlett Johansson has said that she supports SodaStream because it encourages economic cooperation between Israelis and Palestinians. She was quoted as saying that SodaStream is a company that is not only committed to the environment, but to building a bridge to peace between Israel and Palestine, supporting neighbors working alongside each other, receiving equal pay, equal benefits, and equal rights. That is what is happening in their factory every working day. Now, she made that statement back on January 24th. Now, Waters, of course, faced down accusations of anti-Semitism back last summer after using a controversial prop in his concert tour that is a giant pig embossed with the Star of David. Waters hit back at his critics, insisting that the symbol was meant to target the state of Israel, not the Jewish faith. Now, Scarlett Johansson is set to star in the SodaStream commercial broadcast during the Super Bowl. However, USA Today reported that Fox told SodaStream it would only air the ad if four key words were cut. Sorry, Coke and Pepsi. SodaStream CEO Daniel Birnbaum told USA Today that he would comply with the demand, but said of Fox, quote, "They're afraid of Coke and Pepsi." The network request was reportedly due to both Coca-Cola and Pepsi's purchase of Super Bowl ads, with Pepsi sponsoring the halftime show. SodaStream posted an uncut version of the ad on YouTube, which has had more than 8.7 million views and counting. So the original ad was banned. The original ad was said to be too sexy. The original ad was then turned around and said, if you will edit this, that'll be okay. Now, I've still heard conflicting reports. Will the ad be aired, edited? Fox doesn't like the controversy, or so they say. Now, to me, controversy breeds viewership. Not that you need anything more for an event like the Super Bowl. It is continuously the second highest rated sporting event that you'll have all year, second only to the World Cup. As far as viewership within the United States, it's by far the number one, mostly because Americans are still warming to the sport of soccer. My question to you is, what is the real issue here? Is Fox getting an unfair once around the block for trying to protect a couple of other sponsors? I mean, Coke and Pepsi very rarely pull punches with each other. Would it really be so offensive to either one of them that somebody stepped up and said, sorry, Coke and Pepsi? I mean, it's not like they're not out there competing with them anyway. It's not like they don't have television ads. And it's not like the folks looking to sponsor airtime for the event should be overly concerned about the relationship between other sponsors. Ultimately, that's the nature of competition. Everybody put their message out there and go from there. If that was the case, why would you have both Coke and Pepsi sponsoring you? Why would you have ads for both Budweiser and Coors? Why would you have ads for any company that competes with any other company that's already a sponsor. Are Coke and Pepsi both really concerned about SodaStream grabbing a big chunk of their market? Do they really think having Scarlett Johansson as their spokesperson is going to dig into their market share? Or is there more about the politics? Is there really something to this anti-Semitism? Because no matter how you go about it, if you are somebody that does not like the Zionist state, if you honestly believe that you cannot trust the Israeli government, that still doesn't mean the Jewish people should be treated the same way. If there's one thing that anybody listening to this show should be able to understand, should comprehend very easily, is the fact that the government of a country doesn't always really represent the will of its people. I don't think we put enough thought into that. So if you are one of these people that has a problem with the Israeli government, keep in mind the Israeli people are a different story. For the very same reason that I don't take to the air and call for the destruction of Iran. I don't like what the Iranian government does and says on a daily basis and sometimes. But I understand that the Iranian people aren't the ones that are out there calling for the destruction of the state of Israel. They're not the ones out there saying that Israel's the little Satan and America is the big Satan. Most Iranians, just like most other people all around the world, want to be left alone, to live their lives, to try and provide for the family, and to try and seek some level of comfort and joy in their lives. That's what most people want. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, if you'll remember, that the Iranian people attempted to rise up, unhappy about the re-election of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Of course, our great and wondrous leader, the occupier, had so much very strongly worded things to say. It was just something else, wasn't it? Absolutely amazing. These people, they're suffering, while the government is not. So what is the real threat here? Why are people targeting SodaStream? Just because they're an Israeli company or because they've hired Palestinians? Which, you know, we've discussed before. They're actually former Jordanian refugees. They're true Palestinians scattered to the winds a long time ago. The people calling themselves Palestinians today have no claim on Palestine or what formerly was Palestine, so on and so forth. They are the descendants of a group of people that openly tried to overthrow the Jordanian royal family. The history is there. It's taught in the region, everywhere except amongst the so-called Palestinians. Many of them today don't know that truth. They've never been told that. They've been fed this story. The decision was made when they failed to overthrow the Jordanian royal family. They were cast out. They couldn't gain any sympathy among their Arab brethren. So it made sense to go after the Israelis. they could get support for that, and they didn't. The leadership of these people chose a path of terrorism and occupation. And I've had in-depth discussions about this, and this is not an attack on the individual people. It's just we have all got to recognize how fortunate we are here in the States that we have a bigger voice in who we choose as our leaders, because the leadership is really what's at question. We take it for granted, and we don't pay enough attention to the people that we select. Again, hence my very important call for each and every one of you to stop electing politicians. Excuse me. The idea is to move forward. The idea is to step up and to start garnering average, everyday Americans, ones with an IQ high enough that they can understand the issues that we face, but perhaps not so educated as to believe themselves to be superior to everyone else. The ones that might think it's a good idea, to write simple short laws in language that's easy enough to understand and clear enough so that there's no need for interpretation. Someone that understands rather than writing a 2,000 plus page health care bill that has nothing to do with health care, just taking over the insurance companies gradually. Let's write a 5-page bill that only really addresses what the focus of the bill should be. Let's make sure that the largest piece of legislation we have is the budget, and everything else is secondary. I mean, can you not write a law in 5 pages or less? I bet if you thought about it, any law that you really wanted to pass, if you're going to write it as a standalone law, you could probably write it in 5 sentences or less if you really wanted to. If you wanted to put the power of the people back where it belongs, in the hands of the people. All right, we're going to take another short break, and when we get back, we're going to go ahead and discuss this this Bizzle rap. I'm going to play it in its entirety. We will have the phone lines open up if you'd like to open up and make comments, although I am going to ask that you keep your comments clean and respectful, and we'll talk about it because I kind of have some mixed feelings on it myself, but I think it makes a few really good points. I'd like your feedback on it if you'd like to call in and let me know. Same goes for you folks over in the chat room. If any of you are going to hang with me through the break and give it a listen, give me some feedback. Tell me what you think. I would like to know. Because I have a feeling that this is going to get nasty before it's all said and done. Of course, whenever there's pushback against one thing or another, folks on both sides do tend to get a little testy. Anyway, we'll be right back. Stay with me.
Tap into the truth. Listen in live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog posts and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth every Sunday at 3 p.m. Oh.
That's right. Every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we get started right here on Blog Talk. Phone lines are open, and if you'd like those numbers again, you can give us a call at area code 347-426-3550, or you can give us a toll-free call at 888-287-5313. You can also hit us on Skype. In the meanwhile, I do have a caller, and we'll go ahead and we'll take the caller. You're on the air. Hello? All right, great message. At any rate, it's always good to know that folks that are paying attention. I guess somebody without Super Bowl plans. At any rate, we'll go ahead and we'll get onto the topic. I'm sure a lot of you, if you didn't watch the Grammys, you probably have heard by now about Macklemore's rap Same Love and how they performed several same-sex marriages live on stage during the performance. It's a very pro homosexual community type message. And of course, they are still going on about the civil liberties involved and all that wonderful stuff. And the whole thing is that while you've got that going on, you also have other people that aren't quite so happy with it. And it doesn't necessarily come from a place of hate as much as a lot of folks would like to say it does. But it does come from the fact that there are a lot of Bible-believing Christians that see homosexual behavior as a sin. If you believe biblically, then that was probably going to be your standpoint. That doesn't equal hate. But a lot of folks like to pretend like it does. Now, some people use that as an excuse for hate. And I'm not saying otherwise, okay? But it's important that you understand that there is a distinction. Now, one of the things that I came across the other day was this Christian rapper based out of Houston by the name of Bizzle. Had never heard of him before, but had saw some headlines here and there framed in a very prolific way. Same love, given horrible anti-gay reboot, or whatever the headlines were. It was very tainted and tilted as if it was just a message of hate. And it really wasn't. But before you can make that distinction, you have to be able to hear it, and you have to listen to it. Now, for the folks that are on the front lines fighting this battle for equality for the gay, lesbian community, I can see where you might find some offense to what's being said in it. But ultimately, what I want to find out from you guys is your take on it. I want to know what you guys think about this, because, like I said, I think some legitimate points are made, but I also see where some people could find it offensive to them. So I'm going to play the whole thing. And then after we play it, I'd like some responses in the chat room and some other calls, too. So I'm going to play it right now. Here we go.
But understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Woe to he who calls evil good and good evil. It's funny how the media portrays things. They really pushing hard for this gay thing. Real. And it's so wicked how they manipulate things. Can't even disagree without them making it a hate thing.
Really?
I say you wrong and you holler hate instantly. But you say we the ones who don't tolerate differences. There's a whole lot of things I could say really, but see your hypocrisy is something I can paint vividly. I'm saying it's the way you was born, and I'm sure that you lust like I do, just in a different form. But I'm married, so if I give in to mine, I'm a cheater. If you give in to yours, you just fight to make it legal. You rather fight God than fight sin. The Bible is alright until it calls what you like sin. And I feel so disrespected that you were so desperate you would compare your sexual habits to my skin.
What?
Calling it the new black? Tell me where they do that. They hung us like tree ornaments. Where were you at?
Huh?
They burned us for entertainment. You go through that?
Huh?
Moms raped in front of their kids while they shoot dad. Ever been murdered just for trying to learn how to read, bro?
No.
Show of hands? I ain't think so. So quit comparing the two. It ain't the same fight. You can play straight, we can never play white. Using black people as pawns for your agenda. And these sellout rappers to do whatever you tell them.
Sellout
skirts on stages, campaigning for that black vote. Afraid to be blackballed, so they play that role. You were never oppressed, the devil was a liar.
Liar.
The only thing oppressed was your sexual desire.
That's all.
Keeping your desires oppressed is so lame to you. But when you get married, that's what you expect your mate to do.
Right.
It angers you if I compare you to a pedophile.
Why?
Cause he's sick, right?
Really?
And you better how.
Man, I ain't choose this.
You think he chose that?
But I was born this.
Well, prove he wasn't born that. But you were never a girl. He was once nine, so at one time in his life, it was just fine.
Well,
make your laws right. I'm not buying it, so put him in that same trash can you threw that Bible in. See how that cycle is? Nobody wants to repent of their evil, so we all try justifying it.
We all.
And you say it's about rights, but you lying, though. Domestic partnerships gave you rights a long time ago.
Right.
God created marriage when he did. He defined it, though, so why is it you want what he created but deny him, though? It's not wicked enough switching the definition.
Huh?
You want it done by Christian in a church you worship in,
really?
And that rainbow you using is a gay pride symbol. It represents a covenant with God if you didn't know. Check Genesis 9:13 for the info. Homie, the war is spiritual. You don't know what you in for.
Indeed.
I ain't saying your sin's worse, but it is sin though.
Yeah.
The Lord took the punishment for it all on him though.
Praise
we
God.
Just gotta repent though. The problem is if you don't call it sin, then you walk as if there's nothing to repent for. Let's recap. We all wicked and desire sin, but imagine a world where no one kept their desire. In. If something was called right simply because we desired it, when your right goes against my right, who's right or win? As for being born away, I should never see y'all, ever use a word like retard to describe someone who was born a little differently than we are. I guess Down syndrome really isn't a thing, y'all. What do we call your syndrome? Oh, that term is offensive now when it hits home. So what gives you the right to call the way he was born the defect?
Huh?
I call yours a defect, you feel it's disrespect.
Nah.
You don't believe in God? Hey, the universe says if we all gay, we either die off or have to do it God's way.
Huh.
And God loves you no matter what you struggle with. At least struggle though, don't just give up and quit. Forget how you were born, we were all born in sin. But Christ died for your sin, you can be born again. We were all born in sin, but Christ died so that we could be born again.
Hallelujah. And I never want to act like all gay people are the same, because that's ignorant. But at the same time, what I won't allow you to do is paint this beautiful picture like we don't have people from the LGBT community out here running up in churches, disrupting services, kissing on the pulpit, out here attacking old ladies, throwing crosses down and stomping them, violently assaulting people. So don't take my most aggressive lines that you know or to that group and try to apply it to the friendliest, lovingest gay person, because that's not the case. And to that struggling Christian right now, struggling with homosexuality, fight the good fight, soldier. No matter what anybody says, we all have different desires. We all are drawn towards different sin. And my desire might not be your desire, but I have a desire that's just as strong for another sin. And I have to fight it day in and day out. And sometimes I win, and sometimes I lose. Sometimes I stand, sometimes I fall. But fight the good fight, God is worth it. God bless you. No hate about it. I love you.
All right, so that is Bizzle's response to Macklemore's same love. Now, I want to know what you guys think. I mean, is it offensive? Is it terrible? Is that prolifically anti-gay? Is it hate speech? I don't get hate speech from it. Now, I get a defense from a Christian point of view. I do get where somebody could have that instant flash of anger at hearing themselves being compared to pedophiles or folks with Down syndrome. But at the same time, I also hear at the end the explanation saying, no, I don't say that everybody is bad, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you heard it now. You heard it for yourself. If you hadn't heard it before, there it is. Now, my thought process on this whole thing is that if you're going to perform, then you should be willing to accept that there will be pushback if you're making a statement that's controversial. We have another caller. Let's see what the caller has to say on this particular issue. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
I've had it with you, and I've had it with this whole damn government. Damn pig-dog Americans messing with my family like this. Gee, no, 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 please, God, kill me now. Oh, God, you mind cleaning out the shower next time you shave your legs? It's like a carpet in there.
Well, it's always good to have Peter Griffin on the show with us. Obviously, somebody on Skype is having a little fun at our expense, and at least it's at least it seems to be in good humor. This, I think, is a serious conversation, though, or at least it should be. Yeah, we have this situation, and we shy away from this stuff. We make jokes about it. We make comments left and right. There are people legitimately angry on one side, and then there are people that don't want to face the fact that real people with real feelings are going to be affected by this stuff. And we've got a case in point. It's unrelated to the topic, but a discussion on a court ruling coming up involving jurors. And in fact, one ruling's already been reached, and there is going to be continuation whether or not there will be an appeal. Now, in the next few weeks, a company by the name of AbbVie, a pharmaceutical company that produces right now one of the most promising and successful AIDS drugs that's on the market, well, they'll be making a decision as whether or not they're going to appeal something that is being painted as having a big, far-reaching effect on gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgendered people, regardless of whether or not they have HIV. Now, if the company appeals a recent court ruling and wins, it could come as a blow to those who hope to see states around the country topple the remaining barriers, both to same-sex marriage and laws that protect gay people from discrimination. Now, I'm not aware of some major push to try and topple laws that protect anyone from discrimination, so I'm not sure what they're referencing there. But remember, this particular article was written from the slant that it was designed for the LGBT community. So they want you to buy into the storyline. But anyway, the case in point didn't initially concern gay rights at all. It was a fight between two pharmaceutical companies. Back in 2007, a drug company, Smith Kline Beecham, sued a rival drug manufacturer, Abbott Laboratories, which later spun off its research activities into a new company, AbbVie. And it had quintupled the price of its most used AIDS drug, and that was a move that ended up hurting Smith Kline's bottom line. Now, predictably, Abbott's decision to raise the price of the drug sparked anger and protest from AIDS activists. Still, the case may not have ever come to the attention of the broader gay rights community if it wasn't for an attempt by Abbott to tilt the jury's makeup in its favor. In 2011, a lawyer for Abbott dismissed a potential juror who had revealed he was gay and had friends with HIV. Smith-Klein argued that the removal was discriminatory. And last week, in the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they agreed that it was, in fact, discriminatory. In the unanimous ruling, the three-judge panel called the exclusion of gay jurors unconstitutional. Now, I tend to agree with that if he's only being excluded because he's gay. But he didn't just say he was gay. He said he had friends who were HIV positive. That could unfairly influence his opinion. It could make it difficult for him to be non-prejudicial in hearing the case. That, to me, is a legitimate grounds for dismissal. He wasn't dismissed because he was gay. But at any rate, in the unanimous ruling, the three-judge panel called the exclusion unconstitutional. Agreed, it is. The reach of the ruling goes beyond gay jurors, however, because it touches on one of the most significant legal questions concerning gay rights today. Should laws related to sexual orientation be subject to heightened scrutiny? Over the last several decades, the Supreme Court has developed a three-tiered system for classifying alleged violations of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which says that the states can't deny people equal protection of the law. When the court classifies a case as deserving of heightened scrutiny, it falls onto the state to prove that its laws serve an important state interest. And until recently, the court had reserved this level of scrutiny for cases involving race and gender. Now, evidently, that's changing, as they're now going to include sexual orientation. In Nevada, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is currently reviewing a lawsuit that aims to strike down the state's same-sex marriage ban. And it's not looking good for the opponents of the same-sex marriage, thanks to the court's recent decision in the Abbott case. As Nevada Attorney General Catherine Cortez Masto acknowledged in a statement last week, the state's earlier arguments for banning same-sex marriage may not hold up in court that applies heightened scrutiny and requires the state to justify its law. Now, again, there is an unreasonable level of concern when it comes to certain activities among certain groups. If you want to see bad things in a certain action, you're going to see those bad things. Again, I make the point here that it looks like the statement here that the juror was dismissed not because he was gay, but because he had friends suffering with HIV, who needed the drugs, who probably couldn't afford the drugs, who would undoubtedly side with the side that would provide them for less. Now, while you may wonder, hey, what's wrong with that? Well, you know, I can't say that I blame him. I would side with the side that breaks any viable medication more affordable for the general public. Doesn't matter what the purpose. But the problem is, in a court case, if you're part of a jury trial, if you're going to be a juror, you have to do everything in your power. You have to make every effort that you can to be unbiased. You have to try and put your personal feelings aside. And that's the whole purpose of having the whole jury selection in the first place, so that you can try and weed out the jurors that are going to be predisposed. What's wrong with me today? Blah, 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 blah. We want to weed out the jurors that are going to be predisposed to side one way or the other. And it doesn't matter which way. If you're going to be a jury, you're only supposed to listen to the facts as they're presented in the case. You listen to the evidence. You hear the testimony. And you have to follow protocols and a set of rules that are put forth based on what you hear in court only to render your verdict. That's very hard if you come in with prejudices preset. It is, in fact, unconstitutional if you kick somebody out of a jury pool just because they're gay. But I can't say to what extent this guy having friends that were HIV positive would have affected his ability to be a juror. Ultimately, though, during most types of trials, both lawyers get to scratch so many jurors, and they don't even necessarily have to have a reason. Is this really a big deal? I don't know. I mean, you guys, you tell me. Let me know. Because from what I see, based on how it's read, and again, this article was written for the lesbian, gay, transgender community. It was written in such a fashion that they wanted this group of people to get upset about it and to be aware that they may appeal this decision and so on and so forth. And even within their writing, they didn't come up and say that, oh, it was only because he was gay. Now, if it really was, then yeah, I'm on board. It shouldn't happen. Nobody should be disqualified from being on a jury over their sexual orientation. I don't see that alone makes you any more or any less qualified to sit on a jury. But given the nature of this particular case, would it be difficult for this individual to have been unbiased, to check his views at the door and only follow the instructions of the court? I mean, I don't know. Maybe this guy could have. But that's the whole reason of having the jury selection process, folks. If one of the two attorneys in the case feel like this person probably couldn't do that, then they dismiss them. And, you know, ordinarily, most folks relish the opportunity to get out of jury duty. So I don't know if this guy really wanted to be a juror. He may have said, yes, I have HIV friends, because he wanted to get out of it. And if that's the case, why on earth would you make this a big deal? Is this really the test case? But again, I don't know. I don't know these people, but neither do you. And we need to stop jumping to the conclusions. I know there's a reason why I don't watch the Grammys anymore. It's gotten scary, quite honestly. I heard about Katy Perry's darn near demonic performance. I heard about the same-sex marriages going on. And you know what? I have expounded before. I divulge greatly from a lot of my conservative colleagues in so much that I don't think same-sex marriage is a big deal. And the reason why is because I don't see marriage as being something the state can do anyway. I understand wanting to defend the concept of marriage as biblically defined if you are a Christian, or if you are not a Christian but still follow the tenets of the biblical teaching. I can understand that, but you need to understand that what these so-called progressives are calling marriage is not what we call marriage. Marriage is a spiritual thing. Marriage can't be defined by the state. All we're talking about in either case is a civil union that has certain tax advantages, certain legal advantages in your relationship is being recognized. So I don't think it matters what the states call it. I really don't. So to me, it's none of my business what you're doing or who you're living with. I guess the libertarian in me comes out a little bit here, but it's not. But if you're going to get out there and you're going to push hard, expect push back. It's not reasonable for you not to. If you're going to perform live on national television and do whatever you're going to do, expect there to be some pushback. That's not a curtailing of your First Amendment rights to free speech. It is regular behavior. Or at least it's what should be expected in a free society. I'm going to switch gears and get out of the topic. Not getting much in the way of interaction. The chat room doesn't seem to be particularly active at the moment. And the only caller I keep getting is this guy who's having fun over at the Skype section, which is all well and good. Like I said, as long as it's in reasonably good humor and you keep it relatively clean, it's okay. And it's always great to have Peter Griffin as a guest, by the way. That's very clever. At any rate, let's take a quick look at the farm bill that got passed this past week. This one, not caring very much about it, just in a lot of the same ways that we saw the budget deal that was passed. Happened very quietly and it moved very quickly. Not a lot of discussion. Not a lot of folks had the chance to read it. Well, this $1 trillion farm bill was handled pretty much the same way. Very little documentation, very little coverage by the media went on about this. In fact, the farm bill isn't getting anywhere near the attention that it deserved. Congress, very likely aware of the fact and pouncing on the chance to get its farm bill passed. Understanding that the State of the Union address that took place back on Tuesday provides further cover for what Congress is planning on doing with this. They're hiding from the American public the truth. I mean, the House was expected to vote back on Wednesday, and they did. And the Senate passed it very quickly, and it's expected to cost even more than the Obama stimulus bill. The House and Senate Farm Bill negotiators have come up with a bill that is filled with central planning policies, handouts to special interests, and, well, as you can expect, typically from D.C., wasteful spending. The winners are, of course, the special interests. The losers, you guessed it, everybody else, especially taxpayers, the poor, consumers, and, well, virtually just about any other group of people you can think of. Simply put, the bill picks all of the bad parts of the House and the Senate farm bills and leaves out pretty much any of the good provisions, not that there were very many of those to start with. But we'll take just a quick sampling at some of these. First of all, there's no separation. The farm bill really is pretty much the food stamp bill. About 80% of the farm bill spending is devoted to food stamps. Now, ranking member of the Senate Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry Committee, Senator Thad Cochran, a Republican from Mississippi, explained that the farm bill politics, he explained it well when he argued that the farm bill should include food stamps purely from a political perspective, since it helps get the farm bill passed. That's another one of those examples of what I would like to see, and I'm sure a lot of you would too, because it makes sense. Let's get some separation on these bills. Why on earth are we passing completely unrelated things attaching completely unrelated things to a bill that we know has to be passed. Oh, well, we know why they do it politically, something they'd never vote for by itself. They'll do it when it's wrapped up, bundled together nicely with something else. Now, the House showed leadership by including a provision in its farm bill that would reauthorize farm programs and food stamps for different periods of time to ensure that these programs would at least be considered on different schedules in the future. Now, this would allow both programs to be considered on their own merits, making real reform a possibility and helping to take politics out of the farm bill and replacing it with the interest of the American people. However, in a shocking move, the House gave up this important common sense reform that had wide support. The public overwhelmingly supports separation on almost every topic, not just this one. There is diverse support for separation in the media, from the Washington Post to the Wall Street Journal. Representative Marlon Stutzman, Republican from Indiana, led a group of 27 House members who sent a letter to the Farm Bill Conference expressing strong support for separation. Now, the House caved on the food stamp spending. The food stamp spending had quadrupled since fiscal year 2000, doubled since fiscal year 2008. The House bill would have reduced spending by about $39 billion, while the Senate would have reduced spending by about $4 billion. You know, that's a lot of money to you and me, but $39 billion, $4 billion. At any rate, the reported compromise going to end up about $8 billion, which is $31 billion less, that's about 80%, than what the House sought. Now, broad-based categorical eligibility loopholes are going to be ignored. The problematic policy put in place in 2000 and pushed heavily by the Obama administration, I might add, allows food stamp recipients to enroll in the program even if they have $1 million in the bank. Food stamp recipients could have an unlimited amount of assets, but if their income is low enough, they could still receive food stamps. Congress had the opportunity to eliminate the policy, which would have resulted in about $12 billion in savings over a decade based on current estimates. But they chose instead to just turn the blind eye. The no work requirements. Congress had the opportunity to implement a strong work requirement, putting food stamps on course to promote self-sufficiency for able-bodied adults. But the work provision in the bill is nothing more than a mere work suggestion. A strong work requirement is the most crucial reform for food stamps, but Congress has failed to include such a policy. It does require the, quote, Christmas tree tax. The bill directs the USDA to lift the stay that is blocking the mandatory assessment on Christmas trees. I don't know why that would be part of any bill. But it's here in this one. Virtually unlimited taxpayer liability. There are two new programs that have been added to replace direct payments, one of which covers even minor losses for farmers. The potential cost of these programs could skyrocket based on even modest changes in commodity prices. This is why the House bill had a price ceiling, a cost cap, limiting the exposure that taxpayers would have to pay out for these unknown and costly programs. The new bill doesn't appear to have such a cost cap. Basically, taxpayers are faced with a blank check while farmers are being covered for virtually any risk. Now, don't get me wrong. I like farmers. I think farmers are among America's heroes, and I support farmers. But anytime you put the taxpayers on the hook to cover the risks of farming, I become concerned. And I think most Americans should be. If you disagree, then you disagree, and that's fine. We are Americans. We have that right. I'd like to see safety nets in place. I would like to help alleviate the burden on smaller family farms, but I don't want to put the taxpayers on the hook for anything that they don't have to be on the hook for. There are no taxpayer reforms for the crop insurance program. Taxpayers pay about 62% of the premiums for farmers in the crop insurance program. Other farm programs have a cap on the amount of subsidies received. Even the direct payment program had a $40,000 cap. Neither the House nor the Senate bill had this reform. So it isn't a surprise that it wasn't included in the final bill. However, it is a surprise that one reform in the Senate bill that could have adjusted the premium levels for farmers with adjusted gross income of $750,000 or more appears to have been left out too. Repeal of the catfish inspection program was taken out. There may be no better poster child for what's wrong with the farm bill than the fact that the $14 million a year duplicative and unnecessary USDA catfish inspection program wasn't repealed. The House would have repealed the program, and the GAO, not always known for strong recommendations, has consistently suggested to Congress that the program be repealed. Now, the list certainly could go on. I mean, it is a 949-page bill. And if you take the time to examine all of them, well, there will certainly be more bad news listed throughout it. Unfortunately, this bill has moved very quickly. And apparently, we the people won't know what's in the farm bill until after it's passed. And the public will already be in the process of being harmed by this in every possible negative way. Does it matter? It's just business as usual. So I don't know. It still comes down to the fact that with this farm bill in place, again, so much extra stuff thrown in that's unrelated. Nobody in this country in their right mind is against farmers. Can't be. That's where the food comes from, people. These people are out there every day doing the hard, even the big corporate farms. There are people working on these farms that are doing a lot of hard labor. But my focus is on the smaller farms. My focus is on those folks that are out there honoring a family tradition, on family land, doing the family business. With the giant corporate farms getting bigger and bigger all the time, it's harder and harder for these smaller folks to survive. And we need them all. Everybody should be growing something of their own. If you have enough dirt to raise anything, you should be growing at least one thing of your own. You should be. Some level of self-sufficiency sends a strong message to those people who think that they have you over a barrel. I'm going to go ahead and get to the outrage of the week. And although there was a strong second-place finisher, very close this year, the MSNBC little tweet about the Cheerios ad upcoming, that wasn't the outrage of the week. This week, the outrage of the week happens to be centered in Utah. See, it seems as if there was this this incident where some elementary school kids had their lunches taken away from them. See, up to 40 different children at a Salt Lake City elementary school watched as their meals were dumped in the trash because of outstanding balances on their prepaid lunch accounts. Now, parents were understandably outraged. In fact, Erica Luke, whose 11-year-old daughter attended the school in question, told the Salt Lake Tribune that it was, quote, pretty traumatic and humiliating. City spokesman Jason Olson told the newspaper that the school system had a large number of students who owed money, and the child nutrition manager decided to withhold lunches to deal with the issue. Cafeteria workers didn't realize which students owed money until they had already received their food. So the workers took the lunches away from the students and threw them away. The children were then given milk and fruit. Ms. Luke's was also quoted as saying, "I think it's despicable. These are young children that shouldn't be punished or humiliated for something that parents obviously need to clear up." I tend to agree with that statement. Mr. Olson released an updated statement that also was posted on the district's Facebook page, because, you know, we've got to get everything in the social media these days. He said, quote, "This situation could have and should have been handled in a different manner. We apologize. We understand the feelings of upset parents and students who say this was an embarrassing and humiliating situation. We again apologize and commit to working with parents in rectifying this situation and to ensuring students are never treated in this manner again." So do you buy it? Do you believe it when he says this? Was this a case of, oh, we're so very sorry? Or is this more a case of, oh, we're so very sorry we got caught? We didn't think that you would go to the papers. You're not supposed to question the great and powerful state. It never ceases to amaze me the people that do this kind of work in the first place, the administrators in the schools. They do a lot of hard work. They get very little credit, but so very many of them lean so far to the left. Not all, obviously, and I hate to generalize, but I think we all know that there's an extremely large percentage that do. Now, if these people were really so very disturbed about children going hungry, as we've heard time and time again, as the battle cry of "it's for the children" once again gets yelled, and that's the battle cry That's us going into the flames as we battle for the safety, the security, the health of children all around the world. We want what's best for them. That was true. That was really what they thought, really what they felt. Why would a few dollars keep them from feeding children? I mean, isn't this really just more of a power trip? Hey, we're in charge. We're in control. You little child, you get used to being told what to do. You get used to being told what you can and can't eat. You get used to us, the state, the government. You get used to us telling you what to do, how to behave, what you can eat, when you can eat it. Because if you get used to it now, why would you question it later? Why would you stand up in opposition? Why would you ask for freedom? Why would you expect personal liberty? You wouldn't, would you? This is outrageous. It doesn't matter if these people owed something. The kids aren't the ones making the payments. But once that food went into their trays, then you have to stand up and say, maybe tomorrow we have to do something differently. But you don't go and take them away from the students. How insane is that? It's an effort to make a statement. And that statement is all about we're in charge. It's not about you owe a few bucks, because if that's what it was, they'd be making phone calls to the parents. They'd be sending letters to the parents. There would be time given for the parents to try and rectify the situation. Every effort would have been made if the interest was for the well-being of the child. Don't you think? Wouldn't you agree? I mean, isn't that something that, regardless of what side of the political spectrum we might be on, that we can agree with? Isn't that a universal? Yeah. I mean, if you disagree, let me know. Send me a message. You can do it at tapintothetruth.com. Down near the bottom of the homepage, there's two different ways to send me a message. If you're listening right now, while the show's live, you can say something in the chat room right now, and I'll be happy to say, if you disagree with me, if you think that that's not a universal case, if I'm off base here, let me know. But seriously, isn't that kind of not for the children? And I'm just saying. So that's the outrage of the week. And I just, I still can't get over it, quite honestly. I look at it and I see it, and it makes me want to just grab somebody there and shake them. Like I mentioned, a close second for outrage of the week was the whole MSNBC tweeting out about the upcoming biracial Cheerios commercial on today's Super Bowl. Now, it was entertaining in so much as the fact that there was a lot of hullabaloo about it. became quite the brouhaha. Somebody even got fired, and there was even an official apology from the boys on high over at MSNBC. But, you know, what's kind of sad is the guy who got fired, did he really do something that's out of character for MSNBC? Basically, the tweet came out and said that, no, the conservatives, the right-wingers, they're probably not going to like it, but otherwise, it's a pretty cute commercial. Well, that drew a lot of fire from conservative biracial families. See, the idea still doesn't sink in. It doesn't resonate with them. Oh, you can be a minority. You can even be biracial and still be conservative. Imagine that. I mean, people like Alan West, retired Colonel Alan West, whom I have a great deal of respect for, happens to be black, is a staunch conservative. He goes on national television and gets laughed at by some smug liberals just for being conservative. Oh. You're obviously an idiot because you're black, but you're conservative. Now, maybe you're the one that's obviously an idiot, my little liberal friend. Because conservatism isn't about skin tone. Conservatism is actually, in a lot of ways, about honoring tradition and common sense. Some traditions should not be honored. I'll give you that. Some traditions should be, you know, like following the Constitution. That's kind of a biggie on my list. Obscured statements. Nancy Pelosi actually went out on a limb this week and said that she's outraged because they, meaning Democrats, didn't treat President George W. Bush this way. I mean, I'm sure some of you guys heard that. This one made its way around the social media sites. But, I mean, Nancy Pelosi really said that. On Tuesday, said that a large segment of the GOP is anti-government, anti-science, and anti-Obama. And that while Democrats opposed much of President George W. Bush's agenda, Republican obstructionism to President Obama is something quite stunning. In fact, she said, quote, "What's interesting to me is that Democrats and Republicans know what they believe. They know what they believe, and that's what's happening in Congress. What's happening here now is we have a large segment of the Republican Party that is anti-government. We don't want any more government than we need, but they're anti-government, anti-science, and anti-Obama." Now, that's Nancy Pelosi calling out specifically, without naming them, the Tea Party Republicans. She says they're anti-government because we want a limited government that is held in check by the Constitution. She calls us anti-science, despite being a practicing Catholic herself, or so she says, because many of us have a religious faith and that we try and live our lives in accordance with our faith. And then she says anti-Obama, which is code for you're a racist. And I'm not going to go any further into that because I have a different headline you may have missed. It's a little different than the norm, and I wanted to get into it just because it's kind of science-y, and I wanted to keep things light. But I had to mention that, too, because those were the three things that were so very close on the outrages of the week. And, you know, it was a coin toss to a degree for the two runners-ups because they're both so freaking ridiculous. But I think the Utah school children thing goes above and beyond because that's not just merely politics and people saying something stupid. That was people hurting children at school, people that are administrators, people that are supposed to be doing the job of educating and protecting and providing for the students. So that by far wins an outrage of the week. Headlines you may have missed, like I said, going outside of the norm a little bit. This has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with science. Like I said at the beginning of the show, sometimes the science geek in me comes up. I saw this. I had to include it in this week's broadcast. Physicists say that energy can be teleported without a limit of distance. A team of physicists has proposed a way of teleporting energy over long distances. The technique, which is purely theoretical at this point, surprise, surprise, takes advantage of the strange quantum phenomenon known as entanglement, where two particles share the same existence. The researchers who work out of a university in Japan that I am not going to butcher their name by attempting it, and led by a Dr. Marisierto Hota, described their proposal in the latest edition of Physics Review. Their system exploits properties of squeezed light or vacuum states that should allow for the teleportation of information about the energy state. In turn, this teleported quantum energy could be made usable. Unlike teleportation schemes as portrayed in Star Trek or The Fly, this type of teleportation describes entanglement experiments in which two entangled particles are joined despite no apparent connection between them. When a change happens to one particle, the same change happens to the other, hence the impression of teleportation. Physicists have concluded experiments using light, matter, and now energy, which I kind of thought light was energy, but hey, whatever. According to the group, a measurement on the first particle injects quantum energy into a system. Then, by carefully choosing the measurements to do on a second particle, it is possible to extract the original energy. Now, the article's way more in-depth, and if you're interested in it, you can find it at io9.com. But I just came across that and I wanted to share it because, again, being a science geek, I found it extremely interesting. With a few minutes left, I had kind of wanted to touch on this one too, also very different. I'll go ahead and say briefly, and I'd like to talk about this some next week. So you guys be thinking about it, decide if you want to call in next week and talk about it, do your own research. But have you guys heard about this so-called possession that took place in Indiana? There are stories linking it to it at the Indy Star. You can find information about it at the Daily Caller. You can find information about it at the Blaze. I want you guys to do some homework for me. Look into this, and we're going to talk about it next week. In the meanwhile, if you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's show, in the first hour I was joined by Michael Conley, the executive director of the United States Justice Foundation. Please check them out. Check out the website, which is their initials, .net, United States Justice Foundation, and see if you can't offer a little support as they are fighting for our veterans along with our constitutional rights. Check out last week's broadcast in the archives. Also, please feel free to check out the show over at Spreaker. Remember, you can find us at Stitcher.com, at iTunes, at TuneIn. And remember, as much as I love to say it, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Always understand you're going to have to do your own research. Use your brain. And always be prepared to put in at least a little bit of effort if you want to tap into the truth. Hope you had a great week. Hope you have an even better week upcoming. That's it for this week. Goodbye, everybody.
Counting down by the days.